Chapter 4. From Magic to Madness. A final pivotal moment in my life draws a distinct line between before I used drugs and alcohol and what came after. I don't remember the details so much as the feelings. I distinctly remember that I wasn't drinking very often before this event and didn't smoke marijuana. At 18, I lived with a boyfriend in the truck tire repair shop where he worked. I was timid, quiet, and agreeable. I did not know what I needed or wanted, having learned the life lesson of going with the flow to keep everybody else happy. My boyfriend was good-looking and seemed tough and cool. Think Danny Zuko from Grease. And I felt special most of the time. I felt grown up. And then I got pregnant. I wasn't using birth control and never asked my partners to. Why? Making that request required that I stand up for myself, show some backbone, and risk severing our bond. My training did not include those skills, and my self-esteem at that time was fragile, barely existent. The result of my choice was an unwanted pregnancy. I was afraid to tell him, but eventually I had to. I felt ashamed to be repeating my parents' mistakes. I decided to terminate the pregnancy. I never considered talking with him about keeping the baby, and at 18, I was not prepared or willing to have a child with or without his help. My mother, the same woman I'd hated for calling the police when I reached out for help, went with me and may even have paid the clinic. Did the baby's father show up as well? I believe he did that first time. Following the procedure, I moved to my dad's instead of returning to the shop. I remember feeling a great deal of self-pity and humiliation. Weeks later, I agreed to see the boyfriend again. We met at the pier in Newport Beach, along with his friend who had introduced us and that guy's girlfriend. My boyfriend had a huge bottle of tequila in one hand. The four of us sat on the edge of the pier, carrying on an awkward, superficial conversation, the sun setting behind us, feet dangling over the sand, passing the bottle until we blotted out the awkward and resumed our lives, living in the moment, not considering the consequences of our actions. I could not afford the procedure that included sedation, and that night on the pier, I couldn't drink enough or smoke enough to erase the physical pain. The emotional pain always lingered near the surface as much as I tried to bury those feelings deep under a sea of booze and pretend it hadn't happened. The emotional ache, a heavy burden of guilt from that abortion procedure, is still present. Shortly after the meeting at the pier, I returned to the tire repair shop, and soon after that we had a fight. His boss had requested some services from me while my boyfriend was out on a job. My boyfriend was upset because I would not provide those services to his employer. I was hurt and angry. It was very late in the evening when I made the next decision. I knew some other guys who also lived at the shop smoked weed. Leaving my room on the pretense of using the toilet, I beelined it to their bedroom door instead. I knocked lightly at first. No answer. Not to be deterred, I knocked again, a little more loudly. The red-headed guy opened the door, looking a little annoyed and half asleep until he focused on my face. Then a smile lit up his face. I smiled back and asked him if he had some weed he was willing to share. I did not consider how late it was or that they had to work the next day. My only concern was to get what I wanted. I got high, and it was magic. The redhead and I laughed a bit and flirted a little. What started as an act of spite to show my boyfriend I didn't need him ended up in discovering that I felt better than I had before the fight and didn't care what he thought anymore. The second I smoked pot, everything suddenly tumbled into place. Instantaneously, an ease came over me like a blanket. For perhaps the first time ever, I could speak to others effortlessly. My words just said themselves. Suddenly, I felt comfortable, no longer self-conscious. I felt attractive. People laughed at my sense of humor and I didn't have to work at it. Maybe I was attractive and funny without marijuana, but I didn't know it. I was too up in my head when I was straight. When I was high, I felt the belonging I sought. It didn't concern me what other people thought of me. After the effect inevitably wore off, my discomfort returned. I again cared about what other people thought, and I wanted to be invisible. I worried about what my parents, the cool kids, siblings, and friends were thinking about me, and I'd conclude I needed more of that fearless, confident feeling that weed provided to fit comfortably in the world. I truly believe that no one else felt like they didn't belong, never making the connection that everyone I hung out with probably felt out of place because, eventually, everyone I hung out with smoked weed. The result of my pretending that we hadn't gotten pregnant and I hadn't had an abortion was that I got pregnant again by the same man with the same result, another unwanted pregnancy. Sedated for the procedure that second time made the incident more dreamlike, like it hadn't happened. The relationship with that boyfriend ended shortly after the abortion. I kept seeing alcohol and weed, though. A few months passed, and I'd gotten a job as a receptionist and gopher at a law office. I borrowed my boss's car to run some office errands, and one day I spotted the boy who was with me the day I'd called my mom for help. He stood on a corner near my office waiting for the light to change. He needed a ride home, and I offered to drive. Back at his house, we ended up getting high, and I lost track of time. I returned my boss's car the following day and was fired. I wasn't worried, though. I'd met a bunch of people who lived in a motel near that boy's house who subscribed to my philosophy of living in the moment. I moved in, which in reality meant that I just never left, couch surfing from motel room to motel room with a bunch of other 20-somethings who didn't want to live life on life's terms. I thought I'd found the perfect life, doing what I wanted, drinking, getting high. I was grateful that no one expected much from me. For a while, I landed with a mother and her 3 children, and all I had to do was help keep the small room clean and watch her youngest child occasionally. Almost everyone who lived in that motel smoked weed. Eventually, all the people I associated with drank and smoked. Marijuana was everywhere I was, and I loved it. Choosing that path had consequences, but I couldn't see them at the time. I had little job experience and limited education. I hadn't seen or spoken to my parents in months. I was not progressing in life. I was developing a hell of a cannabis habit, though, always politely prodding someone to light up and share. I found another eligible guy to hang around, who always seemed to have weed. That he had a girlfriend was not a concern. He dreamed of being a professional boxer. I had one little problem, however. In order to get high, I still bummed weed off other people. My marijuana habit grew like a hungry beast, always needing more. The people around me were not smoking it frequently enough for me. Sometimes I look back on my life and wonder how I lived this long. I routinely put myself in dangerous situations. One instance was when I was hanging out with the future boxer and some of his friends smoking weed. He chopped up a few lines of white powder on a glass picture frame with a single-edge razor blade and handed me a straw after he snorted a line. I quickly reasoned that I'd never done cocaine, but I'd seen enough of it on television to assume that this little bit wouldn't harm me, and besides, he seemed okay. Naively believing the guy handing me the straw had my best interest at heart, I accepted it and snorted up that white powder. The next sensation was like shards of glass lacerating my sinuses, and this thought popped into my head. So this is how I die, 18 years old, in a stranger's motel room. A look of sincere concern came over the face of the future boxer, and he asked if I'd ever done speed before. Although I never had, I probably tried to act like I had. He reassured me that I'd be okay and called me crazy girl. He called me that a lot over the next several years. Another time, I needed weed, my own weed. I was tired of waiting for others to light up. I had a fight with the future boxer and was in a spiteful, I'll show him mood. I remembered that the future boxer had scored some weed from an old biker dude who lived in an apartment garage near the motel. So I went on a quest to find weed. It was late in the evening, after 10 o'clock, and I couldn't remember which garage the dealer lived in. I spent some time knocking on several garage doors before I found the right one. We didn't know each other, but I had a name that we both knew. I left that garage a while later, alive and high, with a bag of my very own weed. I don't think I even had any money. I got a front, saying, "I'll gladly pay you Tuesday for a bit of weed today." I didn't need anyone anymore. I could get high on my own. There were many times following my late-night alley adventure to score weed that could have cost me my life, yet here I am writing about it, alive today by the grace of a power greater than me. The future boxer and I made up. He got a job working in a warehouse, I got a job working in an amusement park, and we rented our very own room at the motel. Things between us went well for a while, and then I got pregnant. I quit my job in a second and applied for state aid. I was 19. He and I married in November. Our daughter was born in March 1985. We were separated by September, and eventually we divorced. I expected him to change to my preconceived idea of a family man overnight, but he didn't live up to my ideal of a husband or a father. I spent the next few years as a working single mom, jumping from one man to another, looking for the Hollywood illusion of love, and maintaining my high.